is a critical access model, and current commissioners, their concern is operational efficiencies, we'll call it. Okay, and this is what I would call a classic catch 22. Okay, and here it is here, and this is where you as a community, county commissioners and hospital board, you're going to have to decide on one thing on this, and it is called risk. Okay. What we all want is absolutes, okay? We want absolutes that this is going to work out fine and going to be just fine. We want a guarantee, equal representation here. We want assurances that things are going to operate efficiently and effectively, okay? Those are all great things, but the problem is you're missing the risk factor in this. And I can't give you an answer on that. It has to come from the county commissioners, what they're willing to do and what the hospital board is going to be doing, okay? The healthcare board. Okay, how well are you willing to work together to get that done? And I'm telling you, you're going to have to work together. The commissioners have seen a lot of money go into the community on that. They spent $18 million plus on building these things, these two buildings, to provide services at both the north and south end of the county. Their obligation and opportunity and responsibility is trying to maintain the healthcare delivery systems on both ends and not cut those services. I think one number said we have less services in the south end of Suffolk County than we've had in the last 40 years. So that's a significant concern. Okay, I can hear where they're coming from, and there's ways that I could address that probably raise some hackles on how some things could be done to cause that or not cause it. It might be issues with decisions being made, thinking they're good and then turning out bad, that type of thing. Okay, so that's all one issue on it, the operational efficiencies. Commissioners are saying we really want very little risk on this issue. We want it addressed, and we want it addressed now. Okay, their concern is they're dumping over $6 million into the system from taxpayers' money. They're obligated to address that and defend that. The health board is saying that a critical access model is the only way we're going to be able to increase our revenues and address the issue of dropping levies. Okay? I'm not sure if I'm spelling that right. L-E-V-Y-S, I think is right. And so the critical access model is going to draw money back into the community through the federal government, through the Medicare reimbursement system called Critical Access Hospital. The commissioners are not going to give approval for this until the board gives them some approval of that. So it's a classic catch-22. I can't give you the answer. All I can say is there's risk involved. This is why I say you got to work together as a group. And it comes down to not just cutting salary and wages in an organization, but maybe coming down to holding individuals for productivity standards. If you're paying a lot of money for services that aren't really producing a lot of revenue on your service providers, you might have to look at that. You might have to put them on a productivity standard, RVUs, relative value units. And I'm talking to Melinda about this because she understands what that is. The relative value unit is something that the federal government and their agencies have determined that what a cold RVU is, relative value unit is, and what they're going to pay for that unit, okay? And they give it X number percentages, or 1.3 or 1.2, depending on the service. And so they take a dollar amount times that, and that's what they're going to pay you. And if you're paying somebody far more above that productive level, then they're getting a lot more money drawn out of the system than what the RVU is going to justify. And I'm just giving this for general educational information. So that person probably would need to draw on somebody else who's far more productive, but drawing a lesser amount of money out in the salary range. Those are internal issues that has to be addressed by the administration of the healthcare board. And the board has to be on top of that and well-educated about it and make smart decisions on that. Now, before you ask questions, Okay, so the only way they're going to be able to show that this formula works is to get to the critical access model. The only way they can do it is get the support of the county commissioners to give them the green light to move ahead, to approve the RFPs to get that done. But for them to make that decision, they got to see some type of operational efficiencies being kicked in. It's a classic catch-22. You see what I'm saying? Okay. So, it's too bad it can't be like another 20 degrees less, because then we'd all be in each of our own pockets and not trying to get in each other's. That's a joke. Okay. So that's what we're up against. And really, that's what I want to try and clarify for the decision to move forward here. And this is why we all have to work together. The commissioners can't answer their community without addressing this issue right here. The healthcare board can't address the issues of the county commissioners getting increased in revenues and dropping levels and addressing these operational issues without getting to this point here. And both of you can't get those answered without getting the critical access formula in place and going forward. So that's where we're at.
Mark, can I ask a question? So am I understanding you correctly that we are at an impasse right now?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that, and I think that's a very negative statement on it. We're not at an impasse. All I'm saying is I'm clarifying the issues, and that's what a facilitator does. Because a lot of times the issues get convoluted and blown up because they want to put blame on somebody else why something's not moving forward. It's not moving forward because we're at a catch-22, and nobody's to blame for that. Because we all want the best decision for this community to go forward. Am I right on that? Can I see hands? You don't want this community not to move forward? All right, let's see your hands on who want to see this community move forward on this issue, from the community, just generally. Okay, so I think the commissioners, I don't have to look at them, I know they are, because they already have their money where their mouth is. They put $18 million into facilities, right? So they're already up the plate, they've already been in and out, and they've already know what the score of the game is. And so they're held at a much higher standard on that because they have a responsibility to it. Okay. With that in understanding, the question is, it isn't about them or us, those people or us people. It's about what, how much risk are we willing to take on, and how much are we going to respond to the request of the commissioners on that risk assessment? And honestly, I'd say you have no choice but to respond to it. And I think in the end, the county commissioners will find that they really don't have an answer to the questions that are very legitimate here without moving forward to that critical access model, which means both sides have to have buy-in to this, and both sides have to be willing to shoulder the risk of it to make it work. That's why you got to work together. And if you do something else, if you walk out of this room and say, we're at an impasse, we're going to go do our own thing and heck with them, you're going to splinter this community and it'll never heal. It'll never heal. It'll never heal. Okay? Hopefully I make that point clear. But in case there's any doubt, if you do that, this community will never get over that issue. Because one thing I found, small communities are very, 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 very good at, and that's holding a grudge. Okay?
Really?
And so this comes to the point where you have to rise above and beyond your attitudes towards each other and prejudices and your willingness not to work together. This is a community issue. You have to rise above it. And it doesn't stop here. It doesn't stop at the county commissioners getting their final decision in. It doesn't stop when the board gets their way and gets critical access model. This is an ongoing process of having to work together. This is how governance works. It doesn't work when you tear it apart and you think you're smarter and better than what somebody else is and you're going to go off and do it. Because you do that, you're going to risk everything. So that's just my opinion. That's my opinion. Take it with a grain of salt. Laura, you were going to say something. Laura?
No.
You said you used the phrase risk assessment, and in my world that means something very specific. Would you be willing to expand on what it means in your world?
Accountability.
Okay, so you're not talking a full-blown risk assessment document and...
No, what I think you have all the documents you need. I think you have all the studies you need. I think you have everything you need. You just need to decide what they're going to do with risk.
Okay, thank you.
Okay? And I say accountability because there's accountability to these county commissioners. Every time there's an election, there's accountability. Every time there's a phone call from somebody from the public saying, what the heck's going on there? Why are you making these decisions? They got to give the answers. They can't give the answers if a health care board is not willing to cooperate and manage the operational inefficiencies that they're up against. And that board can't do what they want to do based upon the studies if they can't get to this critical access model.
Okay.
They have to get there. They have to get there. And together, the risk is shared. Okay?
Thank you. It's, like I said, I just need to clarify
whether
you were looking at a particular type of assessment, something formal that looks at their risk financially or risk financially.
No, I think the risks are pretty clear.
I thought so too.
They're well aware of them. They're well aware of their financial risks, and they don't want to take any more on than they have to.
Okay, thank you.
And the health care board doesn't want the responsibility of shutting down more services in the community because they can't get the money that they are already delivering the services in the community, but they're not getting reimbursed fairly by the system. Simply because they haven't reached this position yet.
Okay.
And that was made by administration to me, and I failed to mention that earlier. But I just did. Okay?
Mark. In moving forward, is there a way to, I think I can, you can hear me, yeah? Okay. Is there a way to move forward with a critical access hospital designation in a less expensive manner? Rather than the $7 to $8 million bricks and mortar type.
I think that's a very valid question, and administration can probably check me on this. But the one thing that I'm aware of and I've mentioned this before, but there's issues with this decision too. Okay, if Marbleton only takes $600,000 to $700,000 to get that up to that issue on it, and then move that forward, that might cut out 12 months of construction, that type of thing, getting to that model earlier. And then the healthcare board can look at doing the Pinedale adjustments for critical access. Rather than doing, and I'm not sure how the process is, I haven't looked that closely at it, I haven't seen the timeline of constructions, but if they did that first and got that model in place, maybe some of this cash drain of the financial position could be avoided by getting 12 months earlier into the system. And if they're operating as a hospital, I've talked with my resources, and they're saying there's no reason going 6 months into running it as a hospital, filing a cost report and getting that designations after 6 months and not having to wait a year. There's nothing on the books that say you can't do it, so that's one other alternative. And that's administrative issue on it. These are strategies that should be discussed by the healthcare board and how to do this. And so I would look at it, and boy, when you're talking the money that we're talking about going out the door and getting it to this reimbursement level right away, and then dealing with getting the more expensive remodeling done after you get that designation or during that process of getting it from Marbleton, that makes a lot of sense to me. But
so that
I could be wrong on that.
That brings two entities both giving a little in coming to a conclusion if we do that, right?
Well, what I would say is this. The healthcare board is not in a position to make the best decision on that, and they should step forward and make a recommendation to the commissioners to answer that question. Because that is a legitimate question, but I think the commissioners aren't in that position to answer it. Some of it's population, and you can see it, and I saw it coming in. You know, Pinedale's where the population is at. That's kind of the center on it. But construction-wise, Pinedale was built first, Marbleton second. There's some design considerations given to Marbleton after that fact of learning, and so it can be a quicker turnaround down there. So, Melinda, here you go.
Mark, so just to journey on that a little bit, and Mark, just jump in. So, the original thought was the expansion for the hospital beds would be in Pinedale, the four rooms, because of services, because of CT scanner and such. Both clinics would then be provider-based clinics to be able to also access that cost-based reimbursement. In Marbleton, that $500,000 is essentially the back hall to bring that up to Life Safety Code to be a co-location to the hospital in Pinedale. So I don't know if we can...
Yeah, the construction issues are the construction issues, which is brick and mortar and architect, et cetera, et cetera. You cross that bridge, we know that. This is what I do is I make a quick call to the state and say, what if we do the Marbleton Clinic first to critical access status? Can we get an early designation?
So, great question, because we've gotten that over the last 2 years. So, critical access hospitals generally are 35 miles apart. When we asked the Department of Health with Wyoming survey and license, they had determined that we are within a 35-mile radius, which would not allow two critical access hospitals. We have, since Mark was here, have gone back and asked them to submit to CMS a formal ruling regarding that, because it'll change how healthcare is set up in Sublette County. If CMS, the federal entity that is the sale of everything, if they say no, we're not going to use the radius, we'll use highway miles, then we're at what, 35.6, and that would allow us to have two COS. But if they stay with the radius, it's less than 35, so then it's one CA and co-location at the other community.
So what she's saying is that 35-mile radius is a critical issue with Medicare, Medicaid. CMS is Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Why they only have one M in the middle, I have no idea. That's how the government operates. But anyways, how I'd address this is that... then I would, if they say no, it's a 35-mile radius, the next step I'd say, okay, so if we create the hospital in Marbleton, why couldn't it adjust to be the outreach and then the hospital transfer up to Pinedale, and then we're all considered under one reimbursement methodology. That's just strategies on questions being asked to CMS, and this group here isn't going to get the answers to it. It's a question we need to ask on. And Medicare, Medicaid can dictate on what happens on that, but that's a question I'd ask on it. Just, if nothing else, for informational purposes, and see what they tell you. They may not like that question, but that's okay. We're okay with making them feel a little uncomfortable, too. So, and I think the co-locations, if it comes down to having four beds in Marbleton and four up at Pinedale and working that out somehow, I think that's very doable. You'd be well on your way to the critical access model. So Andy, hopefully that answers your question on it.
I think it does. Jay, did you have a question?
One thing you brought up when we met last time, but about having the hospital south in Marbleton, but having the emergency room up here, was can you have those two separate entities?
And I'll say the healthcare board has tried to address a lot of that, and they're looking at different things on it. And from what I'm able to see on their process, and I think it's a valid one, having the two facilities separated like that is going to be very difficult for patient care. And it's like wanting your cake and eating it too. And it's not going to work well. I think if anything, some of the issues that have to get addressed is the services down in Marbleton. Seeing what can be done there for that community. And, not that I'm saying that Pinedale doesn't get the emergency rooms, but I'm just saying that, those are things the board has to address on. And they've been stuck in tough situations on making decisions and then having to live with those decisions. And so, it's, as I said before, it's not an easy position to be in.
I just have one comment with regard to what Chairman Nelson's initial statement, and that information comes from the future committee recommendations of the healthcare district, enlisting the pros and cons of each facility. And it was your committee, the Hospital Building Committee, that was headed by Scott Sherbel, in the observation made about the facility in Marbleton. that it would be a smaller, easier, faster, cheaper to build facility that allows sooner startup. So I think that was something that prompted our consideration or query into this issue.
So it comes back to the question to CMS and what they would allow you to do.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's where it's at. And I think if they say no, you have to have the primary place done first, which would be Pinedale, and the secondary would be Marbleton, then I think you have, comes back to the catch 22. Are you willing to commit to that? Are they willing to commit to getting their expenses under control and getting them the reimbursement model that allow them to kind of see, some of those expenses will adjust if the revenues go up, higher reimbursement critical access, but it also needs to be addressed on the operational costs involved there too. And what I always use was the Montana Hospital Association salary survey, because that's what you have to compete with. You can zero some of those down by, and they'll have the Wyoming Hospital salary survey that tells you kind of geographically where salaries are being paid for different people. And so that's your competition on getting quality support staff in place, as well as administrative and that type of thing. So those are all critical things, and they can always be debated, but I think there should be some standards that you're trying to shoot for and be within.
Does the, so $6 to $8 million bricks and mortar, we're gonna say 10 to 14 with the rest of that, or are we saying 14 to 18?
Well, what I'm saying is that I think we go with their estimates at $6 to $8 million on getting this up and going.
Bricks and mortar. Okay.
And what I would say, the operational efficiency should shave off some of those additional costs, grains in the process. And the quicker we can get to critical access, the better you'll start seeing a turnaround in the community.
Okay. Does that include an increase of staff that has to take place, Melinda?
So. I believe that Laura had sent you the work coming out of Future Options. And for people in the audience, that Future Options report is available on our website. There is the five-year forecast where it shows the startup again of Marbleton after hours and the staffing for that, Andy. So you'll see an increase based on that. And we want more staff. We want more employees because it has that multiplier effect in our community. That's a good thing. So, but yes, it does include that.
Yeah.
I think it's, was it 7?
What?
New employees?
Yeah.
Seven more employees.
Yeah, and what that would do, see, there's a factor here that you can't measure in all this too, and that's building the trust back up of your communities. And I can tell you from my experience, and I mentioned in the experience that I had, how we took a failing hospital, sole community provider, transferred it to critical access, and constantly fought the reimbursement battle of the hospital and the nursing home, did assisted living, and got that finally filled up. But it wasn't all just about us. You know, it's not about just us in this little town called Shelby. It's about all the surrounding communities and doing outreach to them. Because I can tell you, a little town called Valier, the critical access hospital made an absolute stupid, and please don't put this out there, decision not to support the physician clinic in Valier. They thought it's too small, its population about 300 to 400 people. Too small, not worth our time. They're only 10 miles away, they'll come to us anyways. We wrote them a letter and said, you know, we're interested in putting a clinic there. Would you have any objection? Because it was Pendray County that had the clinic in there. And it was Shell County that was on the outside. So we felt we needed to go through the political chain to make sure they gave us a letter saying, no, we're not interested, go ahead and do it. I can tell you, in the hospital, just having a clinic there and having, you know, 35 visits on 2 days of stay there, an open clinic, brought well in over $500,000 into our critical access hospital. Because our doctors saw the patients there, the loyalty was built, the trust was built. They went to our hospitals 20, 30 miles down the road and did the work there. That's the unspoken, unmeasurable thing that this board and this administration and the medical staff have to build on, is these reach outs to these small communities. You draw them in, the critical access model is going to perform nicely for you. Okay? And that's a simple formula, but everybody's worried about the catch-22. Well, what about the cost of it? What about... we want guarantees. There's no guarantees in this at all. But if you provide quality service at a reasonable price, people are going to come to you. And I told Dr. Burnett this on providers. There's three things for any physician, nurse practitioner, PA, that absolutely will guarantee him success. One is availability, two is amenability, and three is ability. Okay? In that order. If you're not available, nobody's going to come to you. Okay? If you're not nice to these people, they'll go to you once and they'll find somebody else. But if you're available and you treat them decently, they're going to give you a little bit of exception on your abilities. They will. Tell me I'm wrong. You know, they're going to trust you and say, you know, they're going to work hard for me. They're going to do what they can. If they make a mistake, at least they're humans. So, and that's where people really lose the, how do you run a hospital like this? Well, that's it right there, getting people's trust and getting them to come to you. It's not about billboards. It's not about fancy advertising. It's not about guaranteed prices. It's about how you treat each other, working together.
Can I just add a comment about the trust factor? I don't think that the entire burden of trust falls on the healthcare district. I think that that trust is built with support of other boards, the community members being vocal about it, because we can't force that trust on anyone. So
can I stop you there, Mark? I'll answer. Okay, so I hear what you're saying. Okay, how do you build trust? One patient at a time. It's not about billboards. It's not about placing blame on somebody. It's about working hard towards a goal. Yep. And the thing that I really caution you about, you don't keep bringing this issue up. Well, we're trying to build trust. Trust is, people are going to see through that. They're not stupid. You know? And the people who call you on it the quickest are real people. So you got to do it one patient at a time. Okay? Yes?
I have a question on the financial end of it. What do we have a firm commitment from the towns that are, you know, Marbleton, Big Piney, and Pinedale with their commitments that they made earlier?
One thing I asked before I submitted the request to the county commissioners that they verify that. I think you're going to have somebody answer that. So go ahead.
I can definitely answer the one on Pinedale because I was the one that was sent to meet with them. The money is there for this fiscal year. If it is not used by the end of this fiscal year, Pinedale is not guaranteeing that that $1 million is going to be available next fiscal year.
And I can tell you that the county commissioners will say the same thing about the revenues and levies there too. There's never a guarantee in this. So we come back to risk and that type of thing.
I was just going to ask Kathy, is it guaranteed in this fiscal year? Because I've heard some rumblings that there's going to be some conditions attached to it.
Yes. Depending on who you talk to.
Grab the microphone.
Not loud enough? Okay. Mayor Jones does not like the idea of using modular construction. He calls it mobile homes. And if that's the case, he wants to renege on their agreement to provide the $1 million. There are other members of the council that feel he can be overridden. You all know what that political reality looks like.
Let me address that before I go too far into it, because this will lead into emotional stuff, and I want to stay out of that. And this is what I've already tried to address early on. It is that I understand that's an option that has been proposed. I don't know how serious it is. I think that should be something that has been mentioned, and let that dog sleep, let that dog lie. We've got a direction that we're going, and if the board wants to do that down the road, that's going to be the board's decision on it. And the city wants to work in union, in tandem with the healthcare board and the county commissioners, and the city. And I think I'm cautioning any type of puffing up the chest and saying, well, we'll do whatever you want type of thing. And, you know, that's not what this is about. This is about working together and making it work within the community.
Ben is the mayor of Big Piney Town Council, if you want to hear from him about that.
Sure.
So the current motion that was made months ago still stands. Last month, a council lady brought up to revisit the motion. It was tabled last month due to not having a full board. So this next month's council meeting, we're going to revisit it. There will probably be some stipulations, but I'm not 100% sure how we can guarantee those stipulations.
All I can say is this, is once the train starts going one direction, it's going to be very hard to pull it a different direction. So all the constraints they want to put on there, I don't think is going to amount to much, other than getting people riled up and going forward. And if this train starts going the direction of critical access, adjusting the county-owned facilities with the county commissioners, approving the final bid process, I don't care what directions you're going to try and pull that train, it's going to go that direction. So I wouldn't worry too much about that. Those are all issues. And when I say leave a sleeping dog lie, don't start kicking the dog because you want to discuss it and that type of thing. I think it's very valid concerns on it. You know, I've been in mobile homes and modular buildings and that type of thing. And, you know, this is a real eye-opener, the 40 below weather and trying to keep something like that warm. And the dollar amount is about the same on what you're spending. And there isn't that much difference on it. And, you know, so let that dog stay sleepy. I think we've made a lot of progress. We identified the issue. And that risk is something that the clinic board or the hospital board has to assess, as well as the county commissioners, and moving this train forward. And I can't give you the answers on that. All I can do is show you how I see it. Okay? Any other questions?
One thought I keep coming back to related to comments that we've made on this side of the table, and maybe it would seem to be appropriate to ask the healthcare board if they're willing to come up with a plan that would result in making every possible attempt to meet these efficiency standards being within the tubes of expenses.
Let me try and address that.
Okay, thank you.
All right. The question is, and it comes back to the guarantees and reducing risk on it. I think the clinic board has already been in process of trying to address some of that, and you know, they're well aware of that pressure on it. They're well aware it's going to continue on. But the overriding aspect of this is the services that they're already providing that would qualify for better reimbursement on the critical access model they're already providing. Okay, so they're getting less money for those services that are already in their
or
system.
Or no money for some services.
Or no money for some of the services, okay? So it comes down to risk on it. You know, you're wanting a report that you can hold them accountable that's going to guarantee this before you make a decision. And I'm telling you that they aren't going to be able to provide it. They aren't going to be able to do it. The only way it's going to happen is if you allow them to make the transition to critical access and take the risk on with your buildings and allow them to do that. And if you don't, then we'll be here 12 months from now discussing the same issues and not having anything change on them. And the services will be less at that point in time. So I'm just telling you, and from what I've heard just from the verbal of the CFO last time I was here, you know, the cash flow is really stressed. And that's why I really had to push the issues looking at financial statements. So I think that what I want to do is look at trying to get everybody in this room moving towards this critical access model, because that is critical, no pun intended, for you to get to that. And then I will... if you want a guarantee, I'll guarantee this, that you'll have better reimbursement in the critical access model, which will allow you tools and time to really address those critical issues on operations. But if you demand that to be before getting this train on track and rolling, it's not going to happen. I'll guarantee you that. Because you'll end up with nothing. No healthcare delivery system. Because this is why. 23 years of experience in the reimbursement system and studying this and chasing rabbits down holes and everything like that, our federal government, for better or for worse, they wanted to narrow the reimbursement system down. Independent people who wanted to go up and hang their own shack up as a physician, nurse practitioner, whatever, physical therapy, occupational therapy, have to survive on much less reimbursement for services provided, even though it's the same reimbursement that you would do whether you're working for a large hospital in Chicago or out in a hospital in rural Wyoming. Okay? So it's an issue that I've tried to explain through cannibalism. You can stay the same and you can cut costs and you'll survive for a few more months, years, but in the same process you're going to come back to the same with less people to cannibalize for the next time around, and in the end the last person standing ends up starving. Okay? That's trying to be too independent to where you're going to cut your nose off to spite your face. These are all acronyms I like to use because we all can relate to them. And the reality is that critical access model is a model, and the federal government wants to try and control costs within hospitals. We can have a whole other discussion about that. I'd be very happy to entertain that one because I have my own opinions about it. I'm just telling you the formulas that we have to live within that are being put in our lives. Okay? And so the critical access model is the thing we need to drive to.
Mark?
Yes, sir.
With regards to Commissioner Bousman's question, and maybe you can help me or help us understand, I think that what we've stated is we have a fiduciary responsibility to our constituents, and what we're concerned about or what we're asking in reference to this tube of expenses is to have some type of review or assurances that we can move forward with that. I don't think this board has any question with the fact that the critical access hospital is the only model we can go to. We're trying to determine how we can best get there with trying to decrease our risk, no guarantee of no risk.
I'll try to answer this. I think, in all honesty, Melinda and I have already talked about getting a list of the salary and wages and going through them, and she's going to forward that to me, and we'll start the review as soon as I get back next week on it. And so we'll take a look at that and move forward with that. And, you know, I think that we'll do fine on assessing that stuff, and I'll give you an honest opinion on where I think areas are, and as we're driving up here, I kind of addressed some of those issues in the car, so I think that, you know, we'll look at the operations, and if there's a way to make it work more efficiently, we'll take a look at it, and I'll share it with you too, Bob, so.
But what my question is salary and wages the only part of operations that you want to look at? Because that's only a part of the operations budget.
Okay.
Is that the major concern of the county commissioners?
Let me ask that. On the healthcare delivery system, on any healthcare delivery system, there are two major line items that you have to look at in order to run efficiently. And that's your capital expenditures, which we're talking about here, and your salary wages. If you look at your financial statements on Marbleton Clinic on the projections, they're showing that the salary and wages are over 100% of your gross revenues. So to me, that is in itself kind of a something, you know, if we want to get down into this tube of 55 to 60%, that's something you have to look at. Supplies, cutting all the supplies out of your healthcare delivery system is not going to balance your budget. No, it's not. I mean, you can look at it and you can see the vast majority of the healthcare delivery system is the human factor in it, and that's salary and wages. Mm-hmm. Am I advocating to cut salary and wages? No, I'm not. What I'm advocating is that we look at it and see where the money is going. And see how the productivity is being looked at, that type of thing. Those are operational issues and things that we need to look at. I'm hoping that working with Melinda, that she can see that and work with it and run with that. And I'm sure she is. She's competent. I mean, she's done a lot of work on this, and She answered a lot of my other questions that I had on my last trip. So I think you kind of have to look at those areas that are really big line items. Salary and wages are your biggest line item. Nursing home, they'll tell you the same thing. Their biggest line item is the one-on-one care. And their biggest line item for salary and wages is their CNAs. Mm-hmm. Because they're the vast number of people with hands-on treatment of patients. And so they got to figure out how to make their nursing home work within the parameters that they have and the staff that they can afford to put out there and still deliver quality care. Well, just about every nursing home in the United States does, because there is a drive to not allow nursing homes to be the same type style. And baby boomers want more. They want to have a menu of food to eat. They want the massage therapy. They want the, you know, the fingernails done and the toes done. And, you know, they want the free rides. You know, and they're over there laughing and giggling because they know exactly what I'm talking about. And one thing that I'm glad that they're talking about is looking at assisted living home there versus a locked unit. And I expressed my opinion on that to them. And they're very close to making it financially work with assisted living. And I think that in some ways they could cut out, you know, $3,000 a month fairly easily by just changing a few things. But, you know, they're going down the right path. I think they're really on top of it. So. And they're working with a lot less marbles in the bag than you are, I can tell you that. So,
Commissioner, I have a top question.
So, addressing the operational efficiencies, I've been here, actually, January 7th was my 10-year anniversary. And at one point, we had 4 MDs in the South County and 4 MDs up here. 8 medical doctors in a county of 10,000 people. We've now, with Dr. Burnett's retirement, congratulations, by the way, can't wait 12 years for money. We're now down to 3 MDs, and we filled in with mid-levels. So one thing I would ask with iBailey numbers and with some of the projections that not only have costs, construction costs, are they going to go up compared to what this iBailey report has given, understand that we have tried to become more efficient on the operational front. We do only have right now, I think, like I said, the 3 of us, Dr. Fitzsimmons down south, myself and Dr. Albritton in Pinedale. The rest are PAs, FNPs, and I know this community got very used to being able to come up and see an MD whenever they wanted, but things have to change, and we had to become more efficient, and we have. So I just wanted to make sure that people understood we've been trying to do that.
And I would say it's, you know, it's all part of the process on it. And, you know, I can tell you the hardest, well, there's a lot of hard things being in administration and in rural critical access. And, you know, the two things on recruiting a physician, the two hardest things is one, what the number one wasn't recruiting them. The number one thing was keeping them in your community. The number two was recruiting them to your community. And, you know, I tongue in cheek, I lived it for a long time, so I'll share my jokes with you. You know, Shelby, Montana wasn't a destination place, you know. So the type of people that you want to recruit into your areas are people who really admire and respect a small community. And so that's always a challenge to find somebody willing to come in and do that. And so the other thing is administration, once you drop below 4 doctors, being able to rotate emergency room coverage and that type of thing, it's on a burnout phase for them. And so you got to pick up the tempo and get some support for them, because you're going to be basically losing those that have really stuck with your community and really putting too much expectations on them. So just from my personal experience, if you can get the magic number of 5 physicians working with you, that gives them a rotation and that type of thing. So, and I know recruitment's a bugger.
Well, no, just the rotation. You want to talk about that, Dr. Kavanaugh, so people don't walk away with the wrong impression that we're like 1 in 3.
No, and we're really at a 1 in 6 currently. We had we were basically about 1 in 4 when we had two ERs, 35 miles apart. And the goal is to get back to having that coverage. But we will need to have, obviously, more revenue before we can get back to that. And that's there's the catch-22. But in the position we're in, we have pared back to what we have currently. And we do have nurse practitioners that do take weekend call. Leslie Hagenstein is on currently. I handed the phone to her at 8 o'clock this morning. And so we do have mid-levels covering our ER with a support team around of other MDs and such that can always come in. And it's the model we need right now.
Yeah, and this is a medical staff issue on it. And they're all part of the recruitment effort. Anybody who comes in the community is part of the recruitment effort. See, they'll mesh with the people that are here, and it's a difficult balancing process on it. And obviously they've been able to do a lot with a lot less. And to address the Ike Bailey numbers and that type of thing, they're going to change, but I don't know if they're going to change materially. The formula is still going to point you to the critical access model. And so first, if we take the time to rerun those numbers and be back in here in 12 months to discuss the same issues, I think we are going to be wasting time. And it's going to be more of the opposite on it. And so that's why I've been hired, is trying to grease the tracks and get this thing moving. And I think I believe in it. I believe that we've kind of nailed down some of the issues, the critical concerns on it, and the responsibilities. So where do we go from here is the next question.
Mark,
yes.
I think Commissioner Noble had a comment.
I struggle on whether to say anything at all.
Take a risk.
Well, there's always...
Join that risk tree.
We all agree that healthcare is a hard thing to provide, especially in this county. I want to start this out with a question, and it's going to lead to more. In the last 10 years, this comes up quite a bit out there in the public. You guys have spent a significant amount of money. Can you give me that number just to help this conversation?
In the last 10 years?
Yeah.
I've only been a board member.
Well, that's the thing. I'm not pointing the finger. I'm not changing. I'm trying to direct blame because the board members changed, personnel changes, spending's changed.
Yeah, I can't give you that number right now.
The general comment is roughly $80 million. Is that substantial?
Are you taking into consideration? What does that include?
Just in general, you guys have been through $80 million in the last 10 years. And so that brings me to the concern of not administration, but budget and controlling. So our concern, or mine, is how much money will it take to get this on track and the train moving forward? I mean, is this going to continue, or?
Can I step in here on it?
You can.
As I said earlier, the money that's spent, and it's water under the bridge. But the operational issues are an issue that has to stay on front and foremost. And I think the current board is going to have a difficult time answering for history that it has a lot of different factors coming in, a lot of oil revenues and gas revenues being much higher values and that type of thing. And the board, to their credit, has tried to address this with the financial reports from Ike Bailey and seeing what they need to do to change this, because obviously they're aware that changes are coming and they're having to respond to those. Whether they responded timely in the history or not, I think it's obvious that it would have been nice for them to be able to do it sooner. It would have been nice to have critical access here a long time ago in the 90s when it first came out.
Mm-hmm.
But why make a change if there's a lot of easy money out there? I mean, that's kind of human nature. If there's a lot of money there, why should I change if there's going to be a lot of money? And given that I wouldn't expect you guys to be a real independent community, fiercely independent. A few Snickers out there kind of know what I'm talking about. Why the hell would we want to be reliant on the federal government to take care of us? So I understand all that. What I'm saying is water under the bridge. And the important thing isn't where we came from, but where we're going to.
Mark, I have a pretty good idea how you feel about what I'm about to say, but I think it needs to be discussed.
Yep.
The possibility of the county quick claim deeding the clinics over to the rural health care district, and that being the county's contribution to health care.
I would say this, you could do that, and it's in your power to do that. But I think they would turn around and come back to you if there's needs in financial future on it. And I think it'd be one leg off a three-legged stool that you take off and really cause more imbalance in your system. Because it comes down to one word, and that's accountability. And nobody likes accountability. Nobody likes holding people accountable. Nobody likes being held accountable. Okay? And as a county commissioners, you're watching out for the interests of the community. And these are your buildings. You could deed them over to the healthcare board, but I do know that the balance of power works pretty well, and it's difficult at times, and this is all coming back to governance, and I think there's far better decisions made by a community if it's debated and discussed and issues brought out than to just give it all over comp block to somebody to dictate what's going to happen or not happen. Then you never know what the alternatives could have been, would have been, or should have been.
Is it your professional opinion that then Sublette County should remain involved in health care?
Yes. Yes.
However, dang it.
However,
what I wanted to hear.
And I can tell you because I think that you provide a very valuable resource to this community. Because they can trust that whatever happens with those buildings, it's going to be a direct influence on the quality of health care that they do have. Okay. And that's really, truly a very important issue. And the healthcare board knows that their primary responsibility is to manage the delivery system for healthcare. And the brick and mortars is your responsibility to give them those assets. And there is going to be some accountability inherent in that. And I think it's just very necessary.
One more thing from me, and this might be a step in the right direction and showing perhaps trust, but I did a little research on 6 years ago we started charging the healthcare district $100,000 to put toward a fund for maintaining the buildings, and at this point in time there's just a little over $300,000 in that account, so that account has been used and it's been used for maintenance of these buildings. But there's a little over $300,000 right now, and at some future point, I might even suggest that we go a year-to-year basis. If we have enough money in that account, perhaps for that year, the lease for that year can be waived. It's something for us to discuss at a meeting, but there's an olive branch.
So it's a pretty big difference when people work together then against each other. So I think it can happen, and I think it should happen. And this will be a big step, I think, on getting the support of the whole community to utilize the system that's going to happen with the critical access model. And I just think that's real very important.
Question, would it be beneficial for the healthcare board to address the issue of, I hear a lot of people comment about, well, they don't go to the doctor here anyway, but they never get to the point of saying why or why, would it be advantageous as part of the revenue question to address why do people choose not to go here to get service? They could get service here, and instead they go to Jackson or Rock Springs or Cameron.
Well, how I've done that before in my own community on it when I lived in Shelby is you do community survey on it. And that takes some time and some money, and there's different ways or avenues in Montana, and I'm sure they'd have them here in Wyoming. One of the universities that do it for you a lot of times, or if there's a group here that does community surveys and that type of thing, it takes about up to 6 months to get that information out and back and summarized into the people. And what I'd recommend on that, that's a very valuable thing to do, and there's a couple comments I'll make on that. One, I would recommend doing that after you get this thing going forward with critical access. Get a survey out there during the process of bringing this up so administration and the board knows kind of what's happening. It may be that they just don't think that if they have to have a hospitalized stay, they're going somewhere else. You know, that may be things that you can't control, but it's not going to give you the answers that you think will say yay or nay on whether this should go forward or not. You already know that answer. But this is the other side of the coin of that. What I have used those to do in the past is to find out what services are being needed by our community and how to address those services. And one of them that kept coming up in our area was dialysis. And every time I ran the numbers on that financially, it just didn't work. And so, but the important thing is that the community, and you talk about trust, the important thing is that the community is being asked the question, and you're researching their concerns, and then the critical point is to report back to them why or why not you're not providing the services and how you can manage that. So you're communicating back to the community, and that's where the trust is built, in addition to the one-on-one patient care. Okay? So in the future, one of the future events is to do a community survey and use that as part of a strategic financial plan in evaluating and what services that we are providing, what we do well with, what we don't do well with. And I can tell you one of the things that came out is that, and it was just such a shock to all the staff on the floor. The community said we're not treated very nicely by our staff. And so we started surveying everybody who came through our facility. And suddenly, the staff, rather than saying, you know, they're really working my butt off here, and I'm gonna, you know, they're all growling, I'll take care of this patient. Well, what's your problem today? I mean, you can just hear how this stuff goes. When they start getting the surveys and feedback, it's like, did I really say that to them? And suddenly they started having a different way on how they're treating people. And really what it comes down to is how you treat people. If you want success in your organization, improve how your interpersonal reaction is to the community coming to you for those services. You improve that, you improve your quality of health. And you do that by surveying the people that are coming in. And we had a real-time survey that we installed over time. And they told you point blank, you know, this nurse bit my head off and spit down my throat, you know, they'll tell you that. And then you go to that nurse and, well, yeah, it wasn't such a good day, but the next time around, that nurse or that CNA or the ward clerk that's admitting will start thinking, maybe I need to kind of do this a little differently, you know? And as administrator, you can point out to them, the number of patients we get through this door directly reflects in the wages we can afford to pay you. You know, you try and relate it into the personal stuff.
Mark?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, amenability, yeah, right. I think we all need that. I go back in terms of moving forward, or what to do to move forward, to the diagram that you first drew with the two concerns, I suppose, for the commissioners. And I think we need those two things to move forward. One is the RFP. With both the design to build and the traditional model. And the other is the financial statements that you've already requested. And I think once we get those two things, that would be, in my mind, our next step towards moving forward.
So what I'd recommend to administration is that get your most, probably the last 2 or 3 years of your financial statements together. That were either reviewed or audited by independent accountants or however you present them, and your year-to-date most current accurate financial statements to present to them. Whatever it is, it's not your fault, it's what the numbers are giving. So you got to bring them up and present them to them, okay? And what the commissioner is going to have to do at the next meeting is, and I'm recommending that you present them at that board meeting to them or try and get them before the meeting so that they can see where you're at and the reason why you want to push for the critical access. Because my guess would be is that things are probably not going so well, and that's why you need to push harder to get to the critical access, because one, you're aware of the revenues that you've been able to count on are going to be less, and two, the volumes are either dropping or not reimbursing you what you are already providing the services for. And so those are real critical aspects of reasoning justifying your position and needing to move forward on the critical access. What I'd recommend the county commissioners, if they get that information beforehand, take a look at them, read them for what they are. Don't pepper them with a lot of questions, because you know the operational efficiencies are already an issue and it's on the table and they have to address it. You have to be in the position of trying to make a decision, of supporting the RFP process, that you review the final recommendations from the healthcare board with all the RFPs in front of you. And they can recommend what they're going to recommend. You make the final decisions based upon everything in front of you, so you make a reasonable, informed decision on them and the support on it, and then you can discuss the rents on it too if you want to do that. And I think I've outlined that and sent that back to you in December on that. That will be a big roadblock removed from this moving forward, and I think it's very important to get that going. And then you're going to have to write HERD. You're going to have to write HERD on financial statements, and I'd recommend that the healthcare board share those financial statements to you on a monthly basis, and just so that you're educated and you know what they're up against and why they're pushing so hard to get this done, because I don't think they want to be in a position of, you know, everything's gone, folks, we got to shut the doors. You know, they want to have some help here, and getting to the critical access model is important for them to get that done.
So you want that information brought directly to the county commissioners? Is that what you're recommending?
Yes,
or I'll bring it through you.
I give it to them and CC me on it. So, okay.
Who was the last audit?
I have no idea. I'm assuming it's 12/31.
What?
When was your last fiscal year?
Last fiscal year was June 30th.
Okay, so get them June 30th and then a year to date.
I don't have an audit done for this.
No, I know, but you have internal financial statements, and you can produce that and say it's an unaudited financial statement for internal uses only. And that's all it has to be.
So, Mark, to the audience, can you say, share that all this info is on our website?
It's on our website.
Yeah. Each month's operating statement, our full disclosure, but okay. We will pull together.
Okay, yeah, I think.
In our audits as well.
Okay, that sounds good. It was hard to find the iBailey stuff on your website, so it's a little cumbersome to get through it. And you're looking. Quite honestly, you're looking at a bunch of guys here who don't mess around with computers too much.
That's so. My next question. Directly to them or mail?
I think if you do an email, it'll get to them. They can print it off. So, but the hard part is to, you know, and this kind of comes down to, okay, you've got the information. They don't know where it's at. And so the message that gets delivered, you go find it. It's on my site. And then it gets to be kind of that pushback. You know, just call it off or set the link to it that will go right to it on an email and email it to them. Say, this will link it to your year-to-date financials and the audited financial statements. Make it easy for all of us. So, okay. So the information that I've found out there has been very valuable, but I haven't been able to do it without somebody showing me where it's at. But I think I'm pretty proficient with computers. I'm on them all the time. So, and that's what I'd recommend. Make it a lot easier and probably go to alleviating a lot of mistrust on whether or not the information's there or not. And it's there. Just send the link. And if there's concerns, be there the day that on the meeting and just say, would you like to address any of the concerns on it? And I'd recommend that it just be a matter of two or three questions, or the financials will explain themselves. You can go over any highlights on them and reiterate the importance of going to critical access. Okay?
Mark, I'd like to recommend that if the towns are can commit some money to this, that possibly they send CC the town people, the mayor of each town, this same information.
Well, this is what I would do. I would get this thing passed where the county commissioners are supporting it moving forward. And then with the mayor here, if he's interested in seeing that, sharing it, let's get past this first big roadblock. Because once this train starts going and flowing the information, I think it'll be very much easier process. Okay? So there is going to be some risk, but I think it's a reasonable decision to move forward on this. I'm recommending that this be done here in the parameters we talked about the industrial standards and the tubes that we've talked about. And maintaining those costs in that, reviewing them, and presenting the financial statements to the county commissioners, and the RFP process. And I think that will, it's going to happen.
Mark, when we talk about this whole thing, I think everybody is in full agreement that this is the solution. We've got to get on the same page and get moving down the track, like you said. Speed, efficiency, money, and reimbursement. Those are the big things. And that's why we have to do this. My question is, when the curveball came, was construction. Where is that going to take place? And I don't know if the Marbleton Big Pine Clinic, when it comes behind speed, if that has been ruled out. I don't know.
I would say it hasn't been. Question has to get to CMS about allowing it to either go forward in Marbleton, if they would allow that to happen there, and then Goldcroft and Pinedale and be the outreach on it. You know, it depends on what the federal government's going to do. And that question's going to be asked. Melinda's going to ask. I was thinking no proverbial about sitting on something or getting off.
Well, you're the one that threw the curveball when you mentioned it about a month ago.
But what I would say is the recommendation is that I would not allow this to sit and fester or to sit and go stale on you. You know, you've been given a lot of information. I've had a lot of my recommendation is to try and move forward. I'm not guaranteeing anything. Other than the fact that you got to stay involved and manage the risk on both sides.
Well, myself personally, all I need is a question answered, and it's all financial.
Okay. What was that question?
Well, the question is if it costs $8 million to build a car in Pinedale, and it costs $2 million to refurbish the clinic in Marbleton Big Piney, and it can be a car. But we are also getting reimbursement, we're on the train, and we're moving forward. Is that the way we should go? The discussion.
We'll know more when we get an answer from CMS, sure. And we can probably get some guidance on that, I would think. And if they say no to Marbleton, my recommendation would still be to move forward with it.
Okay.
Timeline keeps being brought up, but the CNS or whatever, what's their timeline? Were they going to be 3 weeks responding, 3 months?
No, that's a good question, Mark. So that's a good question. In anticipation of this meeting, it was right before Christmas that we talked to Laura Hudspeth and her team again, and I reached out again, must have been Wednesday, asking for that time. I have not heard back from them. I can start forwarding those emails both to Mark and Andy, to keep everybody in the loop on that conversation.
I just wonder, because time's critical. You didn't want to sit and fester on this.
I think the big point too with CMS is that they aren't going to make any decisions until we make a decision, because it's really contingent upon us being willing to step up and take the project on.
How would we make a decision if we don't have that answer?
If we don't know whether we're going to Big Piney or Pinedale.
Well, I think the question is going to be answered by CMS telling us if we can do that. And then that'll tell you, go to Big Pine and do it there first and get the designation, and then we do Pinedale. If they say, no, we can't allow you to do Big Piney first with those type of considerations of Marbleton Clinic, and then your answer is you have to do Pinedale first. So either way, your green light is going to have to be to go, whether it's Marbleton or Big Pine. And CMS has got to give us some guidance on that, which I think they will. And I can't give you more than that because I can't answer for CMS. But I can tell you, ask the questions, and whatever answer it is, I'm still going to be giving you the recommendation. If you want to keep your facilities going forward and surviving, you eventually get to critical access one way or another. So it's a big decision, I understand that. And that's not an easy decision. So
I guess I just have that concern because of the cost of one of them to count together, maybe it's more simpler.
It's a logical solution to it.
We would all be much more aboard for half the spending.
Yeah. I understand that. That's a valid point.
Determination is kind of left hanging.
Well, all I can say is I think Melinda will probably be on it on Monday morning, if not sending out emails to him and then following up with phone calls. So.
Would you help me understand the question for CMS? Are we actually asking CMS, is it...
Okay, are we asking CMS,
it is legal, or do we need their blessing, whatever, to have a con in Marbleton?
So the question is, they need to tell us how they're going to determine the mileage between the two clinics. The first one was a radius, and if you do a radius out from Pineville or even from Marbleton, it's too close.
I understand,
right.
But if so that question seems to me to be related to one of the other facilities being a campus designation, but not to whether one of the other would be preferred or allowed to have a cost.
They're not going to give that determination. They're just going to do the mileage, and then it'll be the healthcare system to decide. If they say it's closer than 35, the CA has to be in one of the communities, and the other community would then be the co-location.
That's exactly what I'm saying. So it's not answering the question of if we could have the CA in Marbleton.
Let me interject here. I understand what Melinda's saying, and I understand what you're asking.
Thank you.
And they're kind of two different things. What Melinda's asking is 35, we will end up with two critical access hospitals, depending upon CMS designation. Mm-hmm. And you're simply asking, can we go with one under the, if they decide a 35-mile radius, if we do one or the other, depending on which is first or second. The first being the lower cost, one conversion to critical access, and allowing that as a toehold to get the reimbursement designation sooner, and then turning to Pinedale, which is a more expensive one, and getting more dollars coming through the critical access model reimbursement formula. Allowing you to build that or do the reconstruction on the Pinedale clinic, and then that allows some alleviation of financial risk on it. And I think that that's the question on it. Will they allow us to have the critical access designation if we convert the Marbleton clinic first at a cheaper dollar amount, start that reimbursement going, and then turn towards Pinedale and do the construction there second? And I think, you know, there would be some challenges with that, most certainly the ER coverage and that type of thing, and patient flow. And I think what the plan is to do the Pinedale first and then the Marbleton second, and that'll be a kind of an expansion of CA.
Mm-hmm.
So if what you're saying is correct, and let's say CMS does it or makes that determination adversely against us with regards to that 35 miles, then what you're saying is, if we build the CA in Pinedale and CMS will not allow us to have a campus facility, then we are forever doomed in Marbleton Big Piney without having emergency room services.
Why can't it
work the other way?
Okay,
I don't understand.
I think that's a different issue. That's not what I was saying. And what I was saying is that you'd simply go the same route on it. You wouldn't be doomed anywhere in Marbleton Clinic on it. And I think
that's why I said I need help understanding. If Marbleton Clinic is not going to be doomed in that fashion, then help me understand how Pinedale Clinic would be doomed if we decided to put the cough in Marbleton.
It would be really
hard.
Huh? It would be. If the ruling said that the clinics were too close and you can only have one area, one clinic is a critical access hospital. Then if you put it in Marbleton first, and they ruled that way, then Pinedale won't qualify for inpatient clinic.
But not for the campus facility provide emergency services.
Yeah, and what I'm saying is keeping the concept of being a campus, but you do the critical access model in Marbleton, and then the campus stays or transfers to Pinedale, and that becomes the outreach part of the critical access, and you still get both units under one cost report and reimbursement on it.
Mm-hmm.
And where a lot of that money, and it's going to be a risk, and a lot of that money that gets reimbursed to the communities is going to be that large capital investment that you have to make, right? Because that's going to up your costs involved with providing the care, and that's going to affect your reimbursement. Now, going critical access and having a lower cost involved in it means your rates aren't going to be as high. So it's a cost reimbursement formula, and you have to understand that.
I understand that, but what I'm trying to understand, and I thought we had this from previous discussions, let's look at two scenarios, and help me understand where I'm going wrong in my thinking. The first scenario is you build the CA in Marbleton Big Piney. and that would allow Pinedale to still function as a branch of that, or campus side of that COG. They would be able to capture the reimbursements allowed under CMS, and they could still provide after-hour services. Is that correct?
That's what I understand. Yes.
Okay. So if that's correct, then I guess the reverse of that would be true as well, that if you put the Critical Access Hospital in Pinedale, then Marbleton Big Piney would still be able to act as a campus facility of that, and still be able to provide or capture those reimbursements for their clinic visits as well as after-hour services.
And
that's correct?
That's what I understand.
Then what I'm not understanding is, to explain to me the drawback, if it works out that it's economically feasible to build a facility for $2 million in Piney as opposed to $8 million in Pinedale, if there's not going to be a negative impact with that respect.
All right, I think that it comes down to this, and I think the board has already addressed this, and it's really you have a lot of your facilities in Pinedale already, and the majority of the population's up here. And for them to go down into critical access hospital bed in Marbleton probably is not going to happen. Mm-hmm. They'll probably go to Jackson or somewhere else. So having it designated a 35-mile radius with Pinedale being your critical access hospital and the outreach down to Marbleton as a critical access bed, and you have four there and four up in Pinedale, you're going to get that benefit of the cost reimbursement. And you're going to have people more likely to stay in their communities and go to each of their facilities on it and support it that way. So, you know, it is a good question, and it's not an answer that you're going to get really directly today on it. And I think if they do it at 35-mile radius and you can do the campus site in Big Piney, if they're allowed for us to do that, and first and foremost, that would cut off about 12 months and get you to the reimbursement quicker. If they say, no, absolutely not, it has to be, you know, and I'm saying this is our what else. If CMS comes back and says, you know, Pinedale is the place you have to go first and do the expansion, or you have to do both at the same time, you know, that's the model you got to go with. But both of them, you have to trend towards critical access on both of them. Okay? And I can't eliminate that risk for you. That's a risk you have to go with. And once a question gets asked by CMS, what directions, you know, they're willing to allow us, giving our distance from other facilities and the remoteness of our healthcare delivery system, I'm hoping that they'll allow some flexibility to what goes first or what goes second. Okay. And I don't have that answer. Only CMS can give that.
Where is CMS? I mean,
it's everywhere.
It seems to be. Is it in Cheyenne? Is it in Denver? Where is it? But who is the lady that we go call and we go into her office and sit down and say, here's our problem?
It's in Denver.
It's in Denver.
Mm-hmm. We're in the Denver area. For Denver.
Can we get a credit card, Marianne? Okay.
No.
Yeah. You keep running. You keep beating that dead horse.
No.
My question now that keeps coming up is Big Piney, Pinedale. I don't know if I've seen any hard numbers on the design build or the traditional method between the two. Has there been any?
No, because they have to get their...
We keep assuming there's a $2 or $4 million difference.
Well, that's where the healthcare board has their frustration. They can't move forward unless they get the okay with from the county commissioners to do the RFP.
So
we've tried to address that.
I struggle seeing that much difference between the two buildings. I mean, they're still going to have the air systems reworked, everything. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sticking up for one or the other, but I want hard numbers between the two if we're going to start picking and choosing.
Okay, so let me tie and address that just a little bit, and Melinda, you can fill in, okay? I think you're not going to know the hard numbers until you do the RFPs, release them, and you'll be able to see on that. And I'd recommend getting CMS and whether they're going to allow you the flexibility to do one over the other, priority. And that's the way to go with it. But I think in order to move forward, you have to get the RFPs on the table to answer your questions and address them. And we also, during the process between now and your next board meeting, hopefully to give them the green light to do the RFPs, they'll get the answer from CMS. Yeah, and she can share that electronically to an email and, you know, that type of thing. So, okay?
I just want to make mention that perhaps we need to remember what RFP stands for, a request for a proposal. Okay, it's not a move ahead and build it.
And the request for proposal is an attempt to offer you a contract to do a specific service to which you sign the line for a given price. And if there's cost overruns or that type of thing, there has to be some justification for it. So, but you're absolutely right. And you won't know those answers until you get the RFP out. They can't get the RFP out until the county commissioners give them the green light.
Who pays for the RFP?
We will. Yeah, we own the building.
Yeah, but the RFP, how much is that going to actually cost?
It's your advertising.
That type of thing. The contractors are going to want to get the job, and so they're going to provide that information knowing that they're serious about gathering those RFPs. So there's very little cost in the county to get to that point.
So when it comes to an RFP, the county, this is not our first rodeo in terms of building a building, whether it be at the fairgrounds or whatever. So we have people in place, but you've also done your homework and have people in place. But you've never built a building.
Okay.
Am I correct?
Yeah.
I personally have not.
No,
yeah.
I didn't.
Well, and I understand that, Mac, and I think what I try to do is address that, having the county commissioners giving the green light on the RFPs, which would mean that you would be involved in the construction of these buildings and that type of thing.
But that's for design and build as well as traditional.
Yeah, you're gonna have everything on your plate there. Right. They're gonna make the recommendations, and then we're probably gonna have to figure out how the reimbursement method goes on paying those bills over the construction process. That's probably gonna be the next hurdle. You know, how is that payment gonna go? But if you're requesting doing the RFPs and giving them directions and staying involved with that with your $2.5 million, you know, it's going to be a process of working together between the board and the county commissioners, explaining what's going on and the percentage of construction done and how is it going and that type of thing. So,
also, because the county owns the buildings, we will be the ones involved in deciding whether we go with the CMAR or we go with the design build.
Mm-hmm. And then if you, the next step after that is, okay, how are you going to work with the clinic construction board on monitoring the construction of this and disbursements of payment to the contractor, that type of thing, which is down the road. So, but that is an issue that's going to have to be addressed. Today, I don't think is a place for it. I think today is the critical access designation and getting the approval and commitments to move forward with it. Yeah, it's a groaner.
So moving forward, there's some things that we need. We need the information from CMS. We need the financial information that is forthcoming to us also, right?
Those are the two big juggernauts I think that the board will provide to you. Probably well before your next meeting.
And you wanted our RFP information, correct?
Yeah, go ahead and send us the RFP information also. What you've already done the homework on, we've got that, right?
We do.
Yeah, we've already got that, but we'll be considering CMAR also.
Yeah, the RFPs typically go through your county attorney to make sure all the right language is in that and moving forward, so nothing's going to go into the paper, I wouldn't say, until your attorney says, this is the language you're going to use, given your intentions of the county commissioners. So that's the other aspect of it. And you're going to want that. I recommend it. So.
So the other question is, how do you want that? Do you want... So the question, I guess, that we have for you is, how do you want the financials and the RFP information presented? Do you want it strictly emailed? And then you can email questions, or do you want to present it during a board meeting? And you can ask those questions in a public session. We can have people and information ready for you. You want it emailed to you prior to your
meeting? Yeah, definitely.
That's, and then present it in person, and we'll talk about it.
Will a decision be made at the next board meeting?
I think I would say there's no guarantees on that. They have to see that information first. And so what my recommendation is, you won't even get to that point of knowing whether they're going to make a decision or not if you don't provide that information. So provide the information, put the ball in their lap, and let them pass it off if they want or take the shot. So
I guess
that's
we
kind
need
of
to be
where you got
to
go, using some coaching.
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's
when we sent out the RFP, though, so we wanted to do both Pinedale and Big Piney, so we have the numbers to compare.
The RFP that I saw requested that, yes, and the design is in both of them. Go ahead, Melinda.
Well, for Marbleton, the only thing that's in that RFP is work above the ceiling mm-hmm. and some minor changes in the back hall. If you're looking at Marbleton being a cop, now we're talking about where are four hospital rooms, where is receiving, where is the director of nursing office, blah, 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 blah.
Is it?
I don't know, as I've seen in many of these conversations, it has to be four hospital rooms?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, it's
amazing. Wasn't that two?
I looked at that list, there wasn't anything less than four.
I guess
no,
just.
I have four.
That was two rooms, two beds in each room.
Currently, the minimum is four.
Yeah. Okay.
So I don't think
four
it's
the bottom line is
you want to have more square footage on the hospital side. So limiting your square footage is limiting your reimbursement on it. Mm-hmm. And Melinda has a very valid point here. The designs for the Marbleton Clinic is just to get it for the accessibility for four beds down there. And so there's probably a significant other design issues that would have to go into that. So your idea of those things going from $600,000 to $800,000 may go up to $6 million, like up here. Yeah. So
that answers a lot of questions.
Yeah. So if that's the case, you might want to ask the architect, what would it take to get the Marbleton Clinic to be a critical access hospital? And if he kind of rolls his eyes and say, oh, it's going to be at least $5 million, then I think that's the answer that they need. Okay. And I think it's just going to go back to support a lot of the decision making by the administration board and their recommendations. So it's just clarifying the facts and moving them forward so they can get what they need to make a decision on. Okay?
Mark, is it four private hospital rooms with one bed each? Is that the requirement? Or is it four rooms, eight beds?
It's actually however you want to design it. You asked on, maybe I should have said that, but it's four beds, minimum critical access. But you're probably going to want to have private rooms in these smaller facilities on it because one of the private, you have four beds, you should at least, and there's a square footage that's already there. Just a matter of putting up some brick and mortar. Marbleton's a little simpler because they don't have curtains that draw between the beds. They have the brick and mortar already there. That's kind of streams like that a little bit. Pinedale does not have that. Down the road, you may want those square footages to be big enough to put two beds in there if the volume grows. And you do it that way. But you know, that's down the road. That's something we'll have to assess somewhere else in the future. Okay? But you have to have four beds, I think, at both facilities is what the designs are calling for. And CMS isn't going to let that go.
I'm going to bring it out just quick. Are we going to continue this for the rest of the day? If we are, we ought to have a lunch break.
I think we're
kind of winding up for this. Mark, can you address some of the risks associated with building too small or, you know, going with the bare minimum?
Well, I think two small ones in this situation are going to work best for both communities. The risks are going to be getting the staffing for one or the other to cover it, you know. How those models are designed on. And so that's the stressor in having two facilities within 35 miles of each other. It's doable. You have the populations in both that should be able to support it. Primarily, Pinedale would probably have a better opportunity for making it simply because the numbers are more up here and the services are more up here. Marbleton would probably do well with it simply because they are smaller and they can streamline the staffing. I think the critical part for Marbleton is that 24-hour emergency service. And so, you know, those are going to be tough issues to deal with. So, and then if you're to have it just in one place in Pinedale, you're going to run into the fact that, you know, people have lost their services on the south end of the county.
and to get them to come to Pine Dale is going to be difficult on it. Just the nature of it, people are going to, they aren't going to forget what they've lost. So.
I guess I was kind of more asking or inquiring about building, the construction part of that, of building too small without anticipating some growth. You know, if you go with two rooms and four beds as opposed to four rooms and four beds with the ability to add up to eight in those four rooms. That was my question.
I think Marlton probably is not as big a concern as Pinedale, but I think your plans allow for some of that. One thing that I would recommend, and I asked about the procedures on it, and it was cut out of the original designs for the Pinedale. But somewhere down the road, you probably need an operating room for procedures that are abdominal or in typically small procedures. You wouldn't do anything in the chest or anything like that, but you'd limit it to small procedures like hernias or gallbladders or appendectomies, that type of thing. That can be done by scopes, and you could have a general surgeon come in and monitor that stuff. And so those are all things that... I think are doable, and you know, depending on the needs and growth on it. Growth is a nice problem to have, I can tell you that. Mm-hmm. You know, the pressure of growth is, if you're going to have problems, is the pressure that you want. The pressure and the problems that you now have, the having come back, are the problems you don't want. Mm-hmm. But in both hands, you have problems, and so you got to choose which problems you want. And that's kind of how I look at it. You got to be an optimistic person in healthcare. And, you know, you got to look at things as opportunities. And growth is an opportunity that presents itself.
And we anticipate growth. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you can kind of see what my thinking is.
Mark?
No, she was going to ask something else. What else, Laura?
On the lines of surgical unit or small space or room, whatever you want to call it, we have been approached by a group of general surgeons who are wanting to invest. I guess maybe we should talk about whether we want to include surgery services and if we want to look at outside investors.
Yeah, and I'll touch a little bit on this. Just trying to figure out how I want to say this. This is what I would say on it. It's like leasing a CT scanner or MRI, okay?
Mm-hmm.
CT scanners are very much needed for diagnostic equipment for doctors,
mm-hmm.
but what you always run into is the initial investment into the machine and the maintenance contract on that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, how will this machine ever have a return on interest, a return on investments, ROI? And you know, that's always a big concern. CT scanners are great revenue producers. And but a lease on a CT doesn't do much other than provide a service to a community, okay? And it becomes a feeder for the investment group that bought that CT scan and placed it at your facility. So in other words, all the money it generates doesn't help your community or your facility. It provides a service, which is a good service, but you never really recapture any investment on it or your lease payments. It all flows from Medicare to your pocketbook to their lease payment. And guaranteed, that's what happens. So if you have outside investors, and I use that as an analogy, if you have outside investors to come in and build a surgical suite that are going to provide the services to you, the big difference is going to be this. They're going to provide the general surgeons to come in and do the procedures here. There will be some type of facility fee that you can generate off of that. But the headache that's going to be relieved is lining up the general surgeons to come in and actually do the procedures. That will be the difference between the two methods on it, okay? If you provide the services here and they use your beds and that type of thing for recovery, that's going to be a benefit to this community. If you decide to build that or suite on yourselves and provide the equipment, the general surgeons come in and they don't like the equipment or they don't like how it's set up and they're not going to profit by it.
Never will.
They probably aren't going to come and
give you the service. They're just going to say, ship the patients to me, and you'll have a big outlay. So I think if they have some skin in the game, so to say, mm-hmm. they're going to be committed to making it work for you. Mm-hmm. Okay? And so that's something to consider, and all I can say is you got to be shrewd about it. You got to be business decisions on it and see what they would be willing to do for you.
So in our discussions with other hospitals, critical access hospitals, what their CEOs have told me is that we need to look at, and this is their very friendly advice, well received, and we're grateful for it, mm-hmm. is that we should look at being more surgically driven because the reimbursements in the surgery department are better than they are, than what you can gather by everything with everything else, even your ambulance service, your everything. So
the question is on that issue, and general surgery is the cheapest way to get to the best return on investment on in any healthcare facility. That's why they always have general surgeon staffed, and they're always doing those procedures. And it would probably be no different here. And so either way, how you decide to move forward with it, you should probably have it in consideration one way or another, whether it's financed by your group or financed by an outside agency coming in and doing it. You do limit patient flow by bringing an outside group in. And I mean, there's both sides of the blade is going to cut one way or another, but it's procedure. It's definitely a lucrative part of the healthcare delivery system.
Mark, I'm going to address the elephant in the living room, the big piney. And it goes back to a comment that you made earlier, which you've heard in the community, that our level of services are lower than they've been in the last 40 years. We've got the mayor of Big Piney sitting here. The concern goes towards those diminished services. How do we help stop the flow? But more importantly, in terms of looking towards the future of this, if we continue to suffer those diminished services, as you alluded to, we're going to have a community in Big Piney, as with your experience in Montana, driving 70 miles the other way to use those hospital services rather than coming up here. So I think it's something that we have to consider moving forward as part of this process. And it's one of my concerns in terms of not necessarily with the critical access hospitals, but how do we approach that and how do we return to that level of services for the southern half of the county?
Well, for that, I'll address it this way. There's been a lot of discussion about where the location of the hospital's at and tailored back on services already provided and taken away. I think it's very much in the discussion and intention of the healthcare board to reestablish those procedures because that is in their proposal. The only way you're going to gain back trust isn't a billboard or advertising or anything like that. It's providing services and meeting patients face-to-face on a day-to-day basis. That's how you're going to rebuild it. And right now you're down on professionals that are in the area and they've made adjustments in trying to do that. Administration, I'm sure, I would bet, is in the process of trying to recruit right now because of those lost services from professionals being in the area. And it's going to be in their best interest to garnish those services in Marbleton to get referrals up to Pinedale when they are needed and not just look at Marbleton as a referral system up to there, but to actually provide the services within the community with people in there, physicians and nurse practitioners and PAs, working with that community and getting them taken care of. It comes down to service, service, and service. The best way to eliminate the critics is to succeed, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And I can't emphasize that more. You're gonna always have critics, you're gonna always have people looking to criticize. The way the healthcare board deals with that is getting the services in the community and providing those services, a quality service, and building that trust back that way, one patient at a time. No easy way about it. And all the advertising money and all the surveys and everything else is just going to be around that bush. The bottom line is service, service, service.
And being able to provide the personnel to to deliver those services in the current system we have is really difficult, because right now we are a cannibalistic system. So.
Well, I don't want to get into that debate, because there would probably be some argument there.
Well, and I think the bottom line is, we've come a long way today on it, and I think we got a good direction on it. And the most important thing is to stay on track. I realize the financial issues are going to be an issue. That's going to be an ongoing issue. And the chair, you got her right here, and she's made well aware of it. She's been taking notes in all those times. I watched every time the financial things come up, she's written something down about them. So if she doesn't address them, I'd be very surprised. And I know Melinda's been writing stuff down, and she's got some things that she'll share with me. And those are definitely valid concerns and questions that need to be answered. And it's not going to get answered today, but it's definitely on their agenda. So again, it comes back to accountability. Okay, so where are we at?
I want to know what those three things were again. Accessibility.
The three A's.
Yeah, give me those.
Availability.
Availability.
It's accessibility, amenability, and then ability. The three A's for any successful medical practice.
That's going in our next staff meeting, Mike.
Well, if you think about it, you're never going to get a patient to come to you if you're not available. Okay? That first encounter with any patient, if you treat them poorly, they're more than likely not going to come back to you, because they feel like they're bothering you. And, you know, and they're sick, they need some type of service that they really don't want to be there, but they need your help. And so if you treat them well, they're more likely to say, okay, I'll do whatever he tells me to. And the ability part comes in after the patient comes back after the first and second visit. So a little humility in there is pretty big. It goes a long ways.
Cool.
Thank
you.
Okay? Kind of goes back to some of the other things I said. Philosophy that I always have is what gets measured gets done. So we've put those things in place in the financial issues. The information that you're requesting is going to come to you electronically. And the questions that are going to be asked CMS are going to go forward either after this meeting or on Monday. And you should get some type of answer one way or another on that. As well as the architectural interest on how much cost it would be to upgrade Marbleton or versus Pinedale, and that may be all the information that you need in one direction. The accountability for future events are there, that if you get this critical access model in place and administration starts addressing some of those tubes that are critical and being financially successful are in place. We've discussed that, and Mary has documented a lot of this, and I'll use those notes to kind of do a report back to you before I leave town. And so those things are all kind of lined up. But my recommendation to the county commissioners is once that information is pushed forward to you and in front of you, they're going to be needing some type of direction on this RFP. And the RFP has to come forward based upon your decisions with your buildings and what's going to happen by your approving that in order for you to make the final decision if this is really truly a go or dead job.
Right, we need the RFPs right in place in order to make that decision,
yes,
too.
And the request from the healthcare board is if they can get that information, they can get the RFPs out and get them back to you to decide on it. And I think that was a critical link as who's going to make that decision. And I think it has to lie in the county commissioners. And I don't think the healthcare board needs to be involved with a lot of that other than designing, saying this is what we need to make this work. Mm-hmm. And if there is a option to those blueprints, Melinda, I would say have them kind of in an alternative for a surgical suite on, I think, your Pinedale clinic. Yeah, and I think that's in that too. And that'll be critical to kind of see. And that'll also address some of the CPT codes that we have, that type of thing. So that's good information coming forward. But I would highly recommend you take this information seriously. We'll do a write-up on it. I'll get it to you. The other financial information should be pushed forward to you to help you in your decision process. So I think that's kind of where we got it.
So with respect to that RFP, we need an RFP for both the design to build and the traditional way. Now, that's something that we cannot take action on. We have to wait till the next meeting. Can we go ahead and request the RFP? You've already got the RFPs from the design to build, but you don't have the RFPs considering construction manager at risk.
We'll need to do that at our next meeting.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, that'll have to be done in an open meeting. Okay.
Well, I say that again, Mark.
I just said, so we'll be seeing you guys can see.
Yeah, and so I think that's a very important thing. Obviously, it is to get that moving forward. I think it'll happen. So,
with any luck, they will have to answer from the window.
Right, and I think she's going to be on it really quick, so no doubt my money on that.
Some of that stuff here, we've already. Well, I've emailed it to Andy. So.
No, I mean, it's for CMA.
I have forwarded everything you've sent to me to these guys. They've got everything that you sent to me.
All right, so my proposal is what we've discussed on the table. I'll give you a written report probably between now and tomorrow morning on what we've discussed and the priorities on it. I'd like a review from Andy. You can forward on to the rest of the board members here, the commissioners, and keep more on that. And we can see if there's anything I missed on it. And then I think we've made a lot of progress in a short amount of time. So, is that all good with that? Anything else for the good of the order?
Not today.
Okay. It's your meeting back, Andy.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for joining us, ladies and gentlemen. This work session is adjourned. Thank you.